Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
I don't care how they did it. I don't care where they did it. I don't care about the way they did it. It's done. The Colts have their first victory of the season. And I'm smiling like a proud father, man. I know Destin remembers what that moment was like. It was a little bit more recent for him than it was for me. But it's not that far apart. I'm your host, Rashad McGinnis. This is the Saddle Up Show. My co-host, Destin Adams, is here with me today. And Destin, how you doing, man?
Good, man. Sometimes I love being wrong. I mean, sometimes as soon as it ends and you just look back on it, you're like, man, I was so wrong and I love it. 1-1-1 feels a lot better than 0-2-1.
Yeah, man. And normally, you know, we give our opening thoughts, but it's just fitting that our first question today is from the incredible Meg. Meg is a good friend of the show. She's over there in The Intercept. You guys follow her. Her at name is The Megan Hall, T-H-E-M-E-G-H-A-N-H-A-L-L. And Meg's first question was, how about them Colts, man? Feels appropriate? No?
First of all, I gotta shout out the at. The Megan Hall at The Destin Adams. I mean, it feels like we're related over here.
Yeah, Meg. I mean, so conceited.
We got that going on. But, I mean, it's a good question. How about them Colts? I mean, I don't know how many of us were expecting through the first three games we'd be perfectly balanced. Insert the Thanos meme from if you guys are Marvel people, but perfectly balanced right there. But probably none of us. I can't imagine anybody was predicting 1-1-1 through three games. But to think if the Colts only had one loss through three games, I think a lot of people would have been like, oh, yeah, they took care of business week one, week two. Week three came. Patrick Mahomes came. He did his thing. And the Colts have a loss. It's all good. It's not how it went down. But I mean, it was a weird game. I don't know about you, Rashad, but I don't know if I ever felt comfortable in that entire four quarters.
No, the Colts kept it within one score, and I kept just looking at the scoreboard saying, how is this game this close? You know, like, I was so excited just to see them hang on and fight. I tweeted that the win wasn't really important to me, you know, just showing some sense of urgency and some fight was really all I was looking for, because this Colts team looks lifeless for the first eight quarters of the season. Well, seven out the first eight quarters of the season. And if you want to throw in OT, then seven,
you know,
seven
what it felt like?
Quarters.
You know what it What's felt that? Like? So I haven't had to do this in a while. I mean, we cover the team now, right? So it's a little different. We kind of, you know, it affects our bank accounts if we don't watch the games. So we got to be on that now. But back in the day, if you're busy, you can't watch the game, you don't want to not watch it. So, you know, you hit that TiVo, you hit that record, you know, hit the button and you come back to it. So watching that game kind of felt like I knew the Colts lost already. And I was watching to see how they were going to lose, you know, like, it's like, I knew the score somehow, some way. I was like, the Chiefs keeping it close. They'll take the lead at the end, loss. We'll feel okay. Not great. Not bad. But I was just watching the entire game, just waiting. I was like, is this the drive where the Chiefs go up two scores? No, not this one. Okay. Oh, fake field goal. Oh, I guess the Chiefs don't want to go up two scores here. I mean, how are the Chiefs going to win? Like, I just kept waiting for it. And then Jelani Woods catches the touchdown. We go up, and it's like 24 seconds left. And not many quarterbacks you think this in your head about, but I see the clock. We score, and I'm like, damn it, we gave Mahomes too much time.
Exactly. 24 seconds. But I saw those three timeouts, and I was like, man, that's an eternity. Ask the Buffalo Bills. Sorry for my people over there at Cover One. And if y'all haven't, go check out the Cover One. Destin made an appearance on there today. I'm sure that'll be up sometime soon, if not now. Man, this game, it brought out a range of emotions in me. And between this game and the Luck podcast that I referred to last episode with Kiefer, I'm just emotionally all over the place. But I was excited. The Colts did it. I'm just upset that, you know, we didn't get a chance to come on here last episode and talk about the win, because I had an emergency. Destin had an emergency. We was just cursed. We couldn't even do the podcast. Normally, if one of us is missing, the other guy can, you know, fill in, get a guest, do something. But both of us having emergencies in the same day is just, we was cursed. We was doomed. So our excitement has gone down a little bit because, you know, we're shifting our focus over to Tennessee. But we're still going to talk about some of the key things from last game that we are concerned about. We have a couple of voicemails that's expressing concern after a win. And I don't want you guys to think we didn't celebrate the win as hard as we did, because we definitely was excited for it. But it's just now, you know, with it happening so fast, we have to turn our attention really quickly to the game that's ahead.
Yeah, we got this first voicemail coming out a little farther than the 317 Indianapolis area code when I saw the number. This one's coming out from Atlanta.
Hey, this is Brian Brown, Colts fan in Atlanta right now. Twitter handle is Brian B. Wise. Brian B. Wise. I think we all see now that Danny Kinner and that right side is a huge issue. What do you guys think about being able to switch up Matt Pryor and make him the guard that he really is? Hopefully Raymond is just a one-week injury, but it's not the receivers, guys. It's the offensive line. Thanks.
Thank you, Brian B. Wise from Atlanta with a great question. Like you said, his Twitter handle is at Brian B. Wise. He has an interesting question, man. It's a question I've been seeing floating around a lot on Twitter. Everybody's thinking that it's just really easy to just move Pryor to guard. That isn't an option. I guess if you feel like Ryman is actually ready to start full time, which it can't be much worse than Pryor. But what I can say is this last game has been Pryor's best game so far out of all the weeks so far. And as bad as the offensive line played as a whole, this has been Pryor's best performance this past week. I think moving him to guard is his more natural position with his size, with his ability in the run game. He doesn't get blown off the ball a lot because of that body mass. His strength is his biggest attribute as an offensive lineman. So I think that would be his best position. But my concern is Ryman ready to be full-time left tackle? I know he missed last game with an injury. Hopefully he'll be back out there this week. We need him. I know the Colts have been giving him snaps periodically, real sporadically, and trying to get him ready. You can see the Colts really want to shift in that direction. That's why they've been filtering him in. Because the worst thing you can do is rotate a guy that you have no plans on. If they was planning on keeping Pryor in as the full-time starter, they would not be rotating him with Bernard Ryman, because they want him to get all those reps, get into a groove, and not disrupt his rhythm by subbing him in and out with Bernard Ryman. So I think that's an option, but it all comes down to me on your belief in Bernard Ryman.
I've been pretty outspoken about Bernard Ryman, man. He's my guy. I had a late first, early second round grade on him. So to get him in the third round, it felt like a steal for me. And kind of like Rashad just said, you don't mix him in unless that's the plan eventually. And another thing for me is I don't think you do this mixing and matching thing unless you want Matt Pryor to be on the field even after the Bernard Ryman situation's figured out. And to me, it just looks like Danny Pinter is the odd man out right now. He's also being asked to play a spot that's not natural to his skill set, like we kind of mentioned earlier. And for me, I agree that Matt Pryor had the best day he's had. But when Danny Pinter's out there, you kind of looked at him like a magnet to the other team's best defensive linemen, where that's where they're going to line him up, where they just absorbed him. And that's why Chris Jones was on that right guard spot just about the entire day. And if Kelly or Smith didn't do the old double team right off the snap, Chris Jones did some illegal things to Danny Pinter all Sunday. Just made Danny Pinter feel very bad about himself, probably worse than even Twitter is making Danny Pinter feel right about now about his guard play.
Yeah, man. I just think it makes too much sense, you know, with the whole prior to guard thing, especially if you have confidence in what Bernard Ryman is doing right now. But a question about the offensive line as a whole, right?
I mean, yeah, we do have that one next. But just how many times have we seen Matt Pryor get ran over straight through?
I mean,
Matt Pryor is a big old dude. Just massive.
He takes on bull rush as well. That's probably a strength, you know, his ability to anchor down and
exactly
get blown up.
Which is why the Matt Pryor fan clubbers on Twitter, when they come at me saying I hate Matt Pryor, it's not even that. To be honest, I feel like I'm a bigger Matt Pryor fan than everyone else who wants him to play left tackle, because what you guys are doing to that man right now is just rude. You move Danny Pinter out and fix the right guard spot, but leave Pryor at left tackle. Where do you think all the offensive line hates going on Twitter? Your boy Matt Pryor. You guys are trying to cause Matt Pryor depression, not me. I'm not trying to do that. But next question here, a little bit more specific on the offensive line, so we can talk about the whole entire unit. Popular question, but, and this is coming, by the way, from at NFL Draft Haas. NFL Draft Haas. Popular question, but how would y'all fix the offensive line? Tons of money plus picks invested there. Assuming the team doesn't make a trade, what five would you roll out there if everyone is healthy? Appreciate the hard work, fellas.
Man, that's an awesome question. First things first, before we start moving people around and shaking things up, I think a communication question, you know, need to be asked. We need to see these guys communicate and see how they perform when the communication is correct and people know their checks, where they're supposed to, who they're supposed to be picking up, protection is being slid. It's recognizing who's the free rushers. It wasn't really that fact that guys was getting beat one-on-one all game, and that was what was causing the pressure on Matt Ryan. It's free runners. You know, Matt Ryan's taking three-step drops, and I see Frank was trying the quick rhythm a little bit to get the ball out, but Matt just has no time, you know. Five-step drops and seven-step drops was just non-existent because Matt wasn't able to get out of his stance. It was really, really bad. You know, Kelly, I know you have something you want to say about Kelly and Pinter, and I'm going to let you touch on that point. But I agree wholeheartedly. I texted Destin and told him I was getting ready to watch the game back, and he said, man, looking at Pinter, it's worse than the clips you've been seeing on Twitter. And watching him down in and down out, it is bad, man. He's the one guy that I would say is consistently getting beat. You know, I know it was Chris Jones, a guy who many people will argue is the second best defensive tackle in the league. I think it's debatable, but he's a top five defensive tackle, no matter how you really want to slice it. So I understand Kansas City made it a focus and made it a point to line him up over Danny Pinter and make him beat Danny Pinter into the ground. That's exactly what he did. You know, even on a touchdown play that went to Jelani Woods, Danny Pinter was beat again by Chris Jones. It just so happens Matt got the ball out in time and we scored the touchdown and took and went ahead. But the five I would roll out is I would probably roll the same five out, but I need communication to be 100% first before I can actually analyze this offensive line and get to individual reps and who's getting beat down in and down out first. Once these guys have the communication issue solved, whether that's Ryan Kelly, whether that's, you know, Matt Ryan, whether it's wide receivers that was missing blocks. It was everybody. This was a joint effort. Nobody's blocking out there. I didn't think Jack Doyle would be missed this much this fast, but it's clear to see that you're feeling that void that he left, man. Along with Zach Pascal, Ashton Doolin, a guy who I thought was a great blocker prior to, he's even struggling as far as in run blocking. And that's something I didn't expect at all. I thought he would be able to fill kind of that Zach Pascal role that was vacated last year, especially in a run game. So I think it's multiple things. I would roll the same guys out, get the communication fixed, have the offensive line coach stress to them communicating with each other. And once I see everything getting picked up and guys doing what they're supposed to do, and don't let me leave out Hines and Taylor as well, because they play a role in this as well, then I will start to make changes if guys are still getting beat.
So I would agree with you, Rashad, if Danny Pinter wasn't so bad at guard. I
agree.
To me, I'm at the point where, I mean, I'll answer the question first and then I'll explain it. So my five that I would roll out, I would put Ryman at left tackle. I'd put Quentin Nelson at left guard. I'd put Ryan Kelly at center. The right guard one's up in the air. I'm going to put Matt Pryor at guard just off of experience. Even though I like Will Fries, and I think he could be a lot more improved than people think, but I'm going to go Pryor because of experience right now and how big the dude is. Like, oh my gosh. And then Braden Smith at right tackle. My reasoning is I think a part of the communication aspect of it is that two guys are out there constantly feeling uncomfortable because they're not playing spots that fit their play style. And again, I think that's more to blame on the front office than Danny Pinter and Matt Pryor. They decided to roll the dice on two guys playing a spot that does not fit their normal skill set and just hoping it works. And to me, that was a little bit of a malpractice move on their parts to not only do it once, but to do it twice.
Do you think seeing it work with Braden Smith played a role in that a couple of years ago?
I mean, maybe, but the problem is with Braden Smith never played guard in the NFL either. Like, they made that move immediately to tackle. They drafted him, said he was a tackle. So that had the entire planning of it. Like, he never in his head had anything in his head other than being a tackle for the Indianapolis Colts. So I guess that was like the difference there for me. Mm-hmm. And just because it worked once with a guy you selected in the second round does not mean you could do it with a guy you just traded a seventh rounder for, or a sixth rounder for Matt Pryor, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And then I believe they took Danny Pinter in the fourth round out of Ball State.
I think it's later than that.
It was either fourth or fifth. I feel like it wasn't super late. But
I'm looking it up as we speak.
Yeah, I'll let you fact check me. I'm going to lock in fourth. I think it was the fourth round. But so Danny Pinter, it was the fifth. I was close.
Okay. Yeah.
So Danny Pinter, we've seen him have success at center. So the situation with him moving to guard and trying it out, I understand to an extent because he had success in the field. You wanted to have him out there, but it's not worked. And a part of this business, a part of being at this level of football is you can't sit on a mistake. You can't make the mistake and try to live with it. Like, you got to correct those things. I mean, we saw Chris Ballard do it this offseason with Carson Wentz. Whether you listening at home believe Carson Wentz was a mistake, we don't need to get into that conversation today.
Please.
But the Colts obviously did. So what did they do? They did what they could and got what they could back and moved on from the mistake. To me, that's what you have to do with with Pinter at this point. Because Pinter, to me, is creating three issues on the offensive line instead of just one. For me, like Matt Pryor isn't affecting Quentin Nelson's play. The speed rushers going around him aren't affecting Quentin Nelson's play. Danny Pinter on Sunday, I don't know how often you saw it, but I tried to track it. I just lost count. Ryan Kelly specifically, Braden Smith did it a couple times as well, but Ryan Kelly off the direct snap would go to Danny Pinter's assignment.
Immediately turn.
Yeah. Immediately, especially if Chris Jones was there, and which – for everyone on Twitter that was going down Ryan Kelly's throat on Sunday for the free rushers up the A-gap, which is what was causing it, was because every time Chris Jones would line up over Pinter, Ryan Kelly would have to do it. Therefore, it was the plan. Because it was not a conscious decision every time. It was a off the snap, he was there. Which, for Kansas City to combat that decision, they would send an extra blitzer up the A-gap to attempt to make Kelly – leave Chris Jones on the one-on-one. But Ryan Kelly decided he would rather let that free blitzer come up the A-gap than let Chris Jones get through there. Now, I think there's probably some issue, and we heard a little bit of this today from Frank Reich. I think Jonathan Taylor messed up a couple of times on his blocking assignments, one of which on the free blitz up the A-gap, he went to help Braden Smith on the right side. For the running back, you have to take the free blitzer. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. He has to see that coming. He has to get that. Jonathan Taylor was a great running back, and people on Twitter were getting upset with me when I said that. This is not me saying anything negative about Jonathan Taylor other than he made a mistake on that play.
I mean, yeah, like I said, too, you know, they all have a part in it. They all literally played a part. And you can, when you go back and watch, you can point to specific plays where this specific guy, you know, missed an assignment or this guy missed an assignment. They have to do better as a unit, man. And moving different guys around, if the communication is not fixed, it won't even matter. It still won't matter. So you have to find a way to get that fixed. The offensive line has just been a hot topic, man. Everybody's been talking about it. And I don't want to just be totally down on them because they did show up at key moments in the fourth quarter and protect a long enough for a couple of Matt Ryan throws. And I really feel like this offense is on the brink of something, taking the next step. I don't want to say something special, like this offense can be, you know, that great. But I think it can be a solid, really, really good offense if this offensive line can
just get back to where it was. Here's an impromptu question for you that you were not prepared for.
Uh-oh.
And I wasn't prepared for either. So I also think the offensive line has been an issue to the point where I'm like, man, like this is holding the entire offense back. Like I think some of our, man, this offense might suck immediate reactions can just come from how, like, because when the offensive line gives Ryan time, like they make big plays. I saw a stat today that they're in like the top 12 of just about every big play statistic.
Yeah, they have 19 chunk plays, 10 passes and 9 rushes, I believe.
Which is the most in the league, I'm pretty sure. Or tied for the most, something like that.
It's ranked high. It's pretty high.
Maybe that one wasn't it. Maybe it was like the statistic of like percents, like percent of like what they've attempted.
Oh, okay.
For number one. Yeah, I think 19 was like tied.
They didn't even run a lot of plays last week, like as a whole. I believe it was 40-some plays.
Well, say the only big long drive we had was that last one, which is why it was so crazy to think about. But the question that I had was if the offensive line figures it out and they get back to playing at a solid level, I'm not trying to put unrealistic expectations that they're going to go from where they're at now to like elite level, but like let's say they can be above average, like slightly above average group. Like, what do you think the ceiling of this offense is?
If the offensive line can be above average, what I think the ceiling of this offense is, I think this can be actually, you might call me crazy, I think it can be a top 10 offense.
So that's what that was my initial thought too.
I have it right at 10. You know, I'm not going to go crazy and say, you know, like the mid, like 6 or 7. I don't have it there. I have it at 10, maybe 9, you know, peak. But the way this offense is, we know what the run game can do if the offensive line is. But Matt Ryan, if he starts to trust these guys, like he showed shades of it, you know, Jelani Woods hitting him twice for in the end zone, I'm sure that built confidence and rapport between those two. But just like that ball down the sideline, a 30-yard jump ball to Alec Pierce on the sideline, that's trust. You know, you don't throw that ball. He's not open. You know, it's just giving your guy a shot. Let him go out there and win. Let him go out there and do what he does best, which I think is Alec Pierce's strongest attribute right now. You know, he's a speed guy, jump ball guy. Give him a chance in a one-on-one situation. And him bringing that in did a ton for his confidence, man. You can tell Alec Pierce was really down on himself after the touchdown drop in week one, getting a concussion, not being able to play week two. I know he really wanted to come out there and make an impact on this game, man. And he did that. And even a four-quarter ball on the out route, that was trust because he threw that ball before Alec Pierce even came out of his break and turned around. And it was right there. He's right there in the spot he was supposed to be. Matt Ryan's throwing literally to spots out there and trusting his wide receivers to get there. And I think that just done a ton of confidence. I think this can be a top 10 offense, man, if this offensive line gets back to even close to what they were about 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, top 10 was my thought as well. I just think they have so much potential in the big play area of things with Pittman and Taylor. Hines, I believe, has that ability. And it's early, and we've only seen one game where Pierce has, like, put it together in a full game. But I think that dude's a dog. I think he has it. Like, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. Like, I think you understand, like, what I'm trying to say. Like, he has, like – and I don't think you see two receivers on both outside spots on a team often, like, have that, like, it mentality, like, that it, like, quality about them. But, like, Pittman and Pierce, man, like they're dogs. Like they're like two guys. Like I would go to war with those two boys, and I'm pumped for that. I say I'm pumped for those two guys on the outside, and I just think they have a lot of potential in that group. Now, the receiver spot that I'm still worried about is I just feel like once you lose either of those two guys, you have no proven production, no guys that – I mean, we saw what happened in Jacksonville. Those two guys missed, and we just didn't have much we didn't really have many options separation-wise because those other guys – I think they're solid fourth and fifth guys on teams in the NFL right now, but it's just hard to start any of them. And, I mean – we have a question coming up that is going to talk a little bit about some of them.
I was about to say, man, you segued us right into our next voicemail. So I think that's pretty good. Why don't you play it?
What's up, gents? What a difference a week makes. It's the kitchen. The Colts community captain on Bleacher Report. I'm glad both you guys took an L in your prediction last week. O-line communication has got to improve, and third and fourth and short were horrendous. I want your thoughts on this. Letting Matty Ice cook. Obviously, it starts up front, but how can we get the ball into our playmakers' hands in space? Hines, Campbell, in my opinion, are not utilized enough, and both of them have that game-breaking ability. Appreciate what you guys are doing. It's Titans week, baby. Let's go. The kitchen out.
Our first ever question from somebody from Bleacher Report. I mean, we're out here spreading the news, Rashad.
Yeah, man. Shout out to my guy, Kitchen. He's the Colts community captain over there at Bleacher Report, man. Me and that guy had many debates in my dark times when I used to argue with people on Bleacher Report years ago. Don't judge me, people. I came from out of a dark place. You know, having those debates, though, it's nice to see that he's been rewarded, and now he's the community captain over there. So if you need anything posted in the Colts community on Bleacher Report, my guy at the kitchen is the one to holler at. He's really good people, and he had a pretty good question.
Most of the time, we talk about tech in terms of a handful of gigantic companies like Google, Meta, and Apple. But some of the most interesting stuff we find online is the product of a single person.
When you're working on your own, I think there's this beauty of being able to come up with an idea and then implement it. Then, in that moment, you don't have to have permission from someone else. There's no red tape.
In the VergeCast series, Solo Acts, we'll get to know these people, the tech they use to get stuff done, and the obstacles they face trying to compete with the giants.
Some people that I talk to and my friends are like, you know, your competitors are Zuckerberg and Musk. Like, aren't you kind of like afraid of that?
Every Monday, our friend Ashley Esqueda will be curating and hosting these interviews and sharing with us what she's learned.
I can't believe the McRib locator was originally a tornado locator.
Right.
Pretty wild.
Listen to our Solo Acts miniseries now in the VergeCast feed, anywhere you find podcasts.
Hello, I'm Neelai Patel, the editor-in-chief of The Verge and host of Decoder, a business podcast where I interview CEOs about big ideas, the problems that come from those ideas, and how they make decisions. It is also surprisingly about org charts. It comes up a lot. We're launching a new limited series that we're calling the Centennial Series, where I talk to CEOs of companies that are over 100 years old, like Xerox, Barnes & Noble, and more. There's no 100-year-old company that's without its struggles, and it's been fascinating to talk to these CEOs about which parts of these companies' history are important and which parts they can let go. A little spoiler for you, if a company is over 100 years old, there's a lot of drama to talk about. It's been a good time. You can listen to the Centennial Series right in the Decoder feed. New episodes of Decoder are out on Tuesday, and the Centennial Series is out on Thursdays. Check it out. We think you're really going to like it. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, so how can the Colts get some of these dynamic weapons, the ball in space? I mean, I think we saw a little bit of with it with Hines this week, and I think that was righting a wrong that they saw where Hines just really wasn't on the field at all against Jacksonville. They had to find a way. We saw him lined up in the slot. We saw some double backfield action. I think you got to do more of that with Hines. I think you have to have him on the field. And no offense to some of these other receivers, I just think Hines offers you more with the ball in his hand to make you plays. I think Paris Campbell has talent. Like, don't get me wrong. I think he has talent. It's just he's not been able to put it together in an NFL game consistently. And so to me, it's hard for me to say the Colts aren't drawing up enough plays for Paris Campbell in space because like I'm at the point right now, like, where do I trust Paris Campbell to make me plays if I draw up plays for him? And I wish I wasn't in that mindset, but I really thought Jacksonville was going to be the game where I was like, Paris is going to show me right here. He's going to be the guy today. And we saw just about every other receiver in the room get more action against Jacksonville. Paris had, I think, one target. And it was the one at the end of the game where I believe he got like a pass interference or the block. It wasn't even a target. It was just the pass interference. This is the first time I heard his name.
Yeah, man. You know, Paris, I think Paris is one of those players, you know, because we didn't get to see him much, fans and you know, myself, you know, we're more in love with what we think Paris can be over what he actually is. You know, I don't believe the Colts know the right situations to put him in. I don't know if there is a right situation to put him in to get the type of production that people are expecting to get out of him. He just hasn't putting it all together yet. And maybe it's due to just lack of experience of playing time. You know, he just hasn't played a lot. A lot of things that people have figured out by year four, Paris just doesn't have it figured out because he just hasn't played enough. You know, he showed spurts. I remember the Pittsburgh game a few years ago. I remember the Jacksonville game 2 years ago, Phillip Rivers' first game of the season. Colts lost that game, but that was probably Paris' best game to me, most complete game. And, you know, we eventually got hurt for the season, the very next game on the end around. It's just he just hasn't putting it all together. Now, Hines is a stud. You know, we know what Hines is. Hines has looked good in multitude of ways. Lining up in the slot, he's proven time and time again that linebackers cannot cover him. But it's just all of this is null and void if the offensive line is not going to create opportunities for Matt Ryan to get the ball to these guys. You know, they want to throw Hines slant routes, quick outs. You know, that can be a substitute for the run game sometimes. When you can't get the run game going, what you like to do is snap the ball. You throw little tunnel screens, bubble screens. Those wasn't working Sunday. They tried a couple of those to the wide receivers. But you would like to get Hines in some of those situations as well. And anytime you see a linebacker on him, you would like to get maybe, you know, wheel routes and different things, angle routes. You want to put him in space and get him the ball. The Colts have to find a way to do that and prioritize that. Like Destin said, last week would have been an ideal opportunity when you was missing Michael Pittman, you was missing Alec Pierce. But now that those guys are back, Hines is a weapon that's not being utilized. And it feels like we say that every season he's not being utilized to his full potential. And I think it's imperative that Frank Wright, Marcus Brady, whoever, you know, finds a way to get this guy's the ball, because we know the type of playmaker he can be and his explosiveness when he gets the ball in his hand.
I was talking to somebody this week, and this was just something that I started to think about. And I'm curious of what your thoughts would be. So, like, for Paris, I think he's in a sticky situation with the Colts right now, because if I just go through every element of receivers right now and how they're schemed open in this system, I'm just trying to think of where Paris ranks in just about all of them. And so far in the year, to get the guys the ball in space, I mean, they use Pittman in that realm a lot, so he's up there above Paris. I feel like this last week we saw Pierce schemed up in the middle of the field in the space like three times. So you've seen Pierce out there doing that. Hines going to the slot. They're going to give him the ball. So I think Paris is at least fourth in that category,
Even Kylan Granson has been schemed up more opportunities than Paris Campbell. So I'm not sure if it's a Paris thing or if it's just, you know, Frank Wright trying to drop opportunities for everybody. And maybe Paris is getting looked over a little bit, but that's something definitely to keep an eye on, man. It's his role. Now that he's finally healthy and we're getting a chance to really assess him, it's been difficult, man. He's just not put it together. He's just not playing well right now at the moment.
And I will say, before we head into this next question for Paris, I think the biggest opening for him right now is if Pittman and Pierce can build on that duo and become something where defenses focus on that. That's the perfect opportunity for Paris to take the top over a defense from that interior spot, become that weapon for Matt Ryan. I just feel like we've seen even Ashton Doolin play that role more than Paris this year so far. I feel like we've seen at least three deep ball attempts to Ashton Doolin this year. Well, I think only one of them was completed, but I can physically remember now three deep balls that Ryan has sent Doolin's way, and I haven't seen Paris get one.
And even in a red zone, you know, we saw, I know Ashton Doolin dropped a touchdown in week one, but we saw him get opportunity. You know, that's the important thing. Paris is not even getting these opportunities. So do the Colts just not see a real role for him on his team at the moment? That's certainly a possibility, because look at the opportunities he's getting. You know, one of the games, his biggest catch this season was a play where they threw it to him and he was trying to lateral the ball. You know, he was running. It was at the end of the game. It was literally like, I just don't know, man. I'm waiting for him to take the next step. There's some people that feel like Paris is the best receiver on this team overall. You know, I can't agree with that, but I've seen people say it multiple times on Twitter. So there's definitely a Paris hive on Twitter. And I still believe in him, man. I still believe if he's given the right opportunity in the right circumstances, maybe he makes a play. And like you say, teams are not focusing on stopping Paris Campbell. He's not somebody that they're going to key on. They're not going to game plan to stop Paris Campbell. There's multiple guys ahead of him right now in the pecking order. That's more of a priority for the defense. And
we'll kind of move over here to this next question, getting over towards Tennessee, but they had to make a comment about a pretty elite ex-AFC South weapon. So this is coming from Doug Rogers at Doug Colts on Twitter. With Tennessee losing AJ Brown, who absolutely torched us in the past, do you see a way that Tennessee finds a way to do the same without him?
A torch is a strong word. Tennessee passing game, Tennessee's offense as a whole has not looked good this season. And shout out to Doug. I appreciate the question. But losing AJ Brown was a big blow to this team, man. It literally was the juice of their passing game. You know, they predicate so much on a run game. We know that's how they build the entire offense. And the fact that Derrick Henry's not performing the way he has been in the past, I don't think he's really been the same guy since the injury. He has hindered this passing game, because you're no longer selling the illusion of a dominant run game, and we're going to play action off of this dominant run game, and you have to honor it with eight guys in the box. I'm not even sure if you have to play Tennessee that way anymore, just because of the ineffectiveness of Henry. So with their current receiving core, Treylon Burks, Robert Woods, who's a solid receiver, Phillips, I like Kyle Phillips. I might like him the most out of all of their receivers, you know.
Is he healthy? He missed last week. Is he healthy now?
He's on the injury report. I didn't know he missed last week, but I seen he's on the first injury report that came out today. So maybe he's not going to play. And if he doesn't, man, that's just another blow to a group of pass catchers that's, you know, we talk about ours, but ours is ahead of theirs. You know, we're one of the few rooms that might be worse than us. So I just don't know, man. I just don't see the way they can dominate us, especially in a passing game. You know, we know what we're going to get with Derrick Henry. We're going to get a bunch of downhill runs through the A gap, through the B gap. You're going to expect Rover. You're going to expect DeForest Buckner to do what they do best, and that's limit Derrick Henry. We have been doing a good job of that. The last time I remember Derrick Henry having a big game on us was the game where DeForest Buckner didn't play, and Grover had to slide over to his spot, was playing out of position. It was just a mess. I believe that was a Thursday night game, and Derrick Henry kind of got off that game. But other than that, the Colts know what they're going to get. Familiar foe. They're going to deal with him accordingly. I just don't see Tennessee doing much to be able to score a lot of points on this Colts defense.
Yeah, I mean, even this last week, Tennessee's offense struggled. They got they didn't score a single point in the second half of that Raiders game. They started out a little hot. They got some things going, had a couple bigger runs from Henry, who kind of stalled out in the second half as well. So that's the thing right now. I mean, I think a guy like AJ Brown helped Ryan Tannehill a lot, helped him get paid a lot of money, even from Tennessee. And I think the thing with Tannehill now is he has to go through so many more progressions to make the right throw. And I think when you add more to the plate of a quarterback who I think is in that average to maybe, with how things are moving towards below average quarterback ends for Ryan Tannehill. Mm-hmm. When you add more on their plates, like, that's when more mistakes happen. That's what we've seen Ryan Tannehill do. whether it's interceptions, whether it's just forcing things, whether it's three and outs because of it. Like, those are the kind of things that we've seen. Now, I will mention that it would be so Indianapolis Colts football for Treylon Burks to have his coming out party against Indianapolis, because we just have this thing where young players find a way to have their welcome to the NFL in a positive way moments against us. And
shout out Nick Westbrook Akina.
There you go. I think Treylon Burks is a talented kid. He just hasn't been able to put it together in a game yet. I think he has the ability to do it. I liked what we saw in the secondary this last week. I'm hoping that that wasn't a Mahomes special thing from Gus Bradley, and he's going to keep up that dynamic, switching between coverages, keeping quarterbacks off their feet. Because I think you did it to Mahomes and you caused him problems. Imagine what you'll do to Ryan Tannehill.
Man, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I would be so upset if I went through a whole show and then I mentioned the fact that Gus was in his goddamn bag for that last game, for that Chiefs game. After what we saw Mahomes do to Gus Bradley in the Raiders last year, twice, went back and watched that game and made my eyes bleed. He was in his
and the national media was on his throat this week.
They were,
and I'm not talking like indie beat writers. I'm talking national media on this guy's case about his comment saying that he thinks he's played Mahomes well in the past. And they were bringing up every receipt they could about how this man has not played Mahomes well in the past. But what did Gus do? He came on Sunday, and we've been pretty critical of Gus Bradley those first 2 weeks. I feel like we could say that, Rashad. We were pretty critical, right?
That's fair. Fair point.
And I think you learn a lot about a man or a person in general when we see how they respond to criticism. And to me, I think Gus Bradley did exactly what he had to do. He got out of his cover three only way, and he still used the cover three window, and he still used that umbrella. Yeah, he was still under it, but he was able to do more in it, more press coverage, a little bit more cover two at times. He even went away a little bit from the single high safety approach here and there. Like, he would throw him back. He was making it difficult for Mahomes to get comfortable. And because of the coverage schemes changing and making Mahomes uncomfortable, I think that helped the defensive line get home on multiple. And so we had to mention that. The question was about AJ Brown, and we just got all the way there. But that's the Saddle Up Show, guys.
Yeah, that's what we do, man. Shout out to Gus Bradley. We had to mention it. It was just so imperative. We didn't have a question specifically on him, because you guys only like to ask questions about the things you're upset about.
Yeah.
You can give us some happy questions sometimes, you know. Talk about how great Gus Bradley is. Talk about how he finally gave Isaiah Rodgers snaps. Talk about the move to go from Nick Cross to Rodney McLeod. Talk about going with Rodney Thomas once Julian Blackman goes down. Rodney Thomas saving a touchdown.
What a play. I mean, there was a holding on that play anyway, but the All-22 on that, if you're listening and you have NFL Plus, or if you have the All-22 access to anything, Rodney Thomas covered some ground to to that ball.
Superman dove for it.
And it was fingertips. Categorized a little lucky, because it would have been a huge play if he didn't get there. But I just got it, like, I wanted to see how much yards that man actually tracked on that. Like, I would love to see a little, like, next-gen stat move on it, because he covered some ground.
And Justin Watson caught almost this exact same ball on the exact same route the week before on J.C. Jackson. That literally the week before, middle of the field, deep post, same route. J.C. Jackson missed it by a hair. Rodney Thomas was able to get over there and get a finger on it. That was a big play. But sticking with the Tennessee theme, we have our last question from a good friend of ours. He left us a voicemail, Jay Robbins. Go ahead, Destin.
Hey, this is Jay Robbins. You can find me from the Blue Stable. My Twitter handle is @RobbinsLucas. I just have the question of, what do you think the Colts game plan is going to be against the Titans on both offense and defense?
Shout out to our guy Jay over there at the Blue Stable with his written work over there. Make sure you guys check it out. But the question at hand, what should our game plan be offensively and defensively? I'll start on offense. Tennessee is in a different situation from this last year. Harold Landry's out for the year, obviously. A shame for real for that young pass rusher that really was coming to his own in the league, just got his bag, got his payday this last offseason. So we don't – Harold Landry won't be out there. We'll have a similar situation to Kansas City where there'll be a dominant interior piece that's probably going to be lining up over Danny Pinter and Jeffrey Simmons. And depending on who you ask, Jeffrey Simmons could be better than Chris Jones. I mean, it just depends on who you ask. If you asked me, which you didn't, but this is my show, so I'll say what I want. but I would say Jeffrey Simmons is better than Chris Jones. I think Jeffrey Simmons, his combo of speed, strength, moves, like that kid's impressive. And I'm more scared about him over Danny Pinter than I was Chris Jones. So I think that a lot of the situation on Sunday for them is they have allowed the most rushing yards in the league this year. So you have to get Jonathan Taylor going. You've struggled a little bit to do that fast this year, where it's taken Taylor a little bit to go because of some offensive line issues that have been happening. I think you got to get Taylor going quick. I think you need to run him quite a bit in the first half, even to kind of get that going, get the score going, really dominate the time of possession in the first half. And what that'll lead to, and what I think you'll beat a team like Tennessee with, is that quick pass movement because you get the run game going. I don't know if I'm ready to say play action yet, because I don't trust the offensive line enough to say I'm playing play action, but you can get the ball out quick without it being play action. We've seen it this year where you can get guys like Pittman on crossers in space. We can see Pierce getting the ball in space. I would love to see if we can get Paris the ball in space just for our guy, the kitchen over at Bleacher Report. But I think those are the two things on offense you're going to have to do. It's going to be the run game, and it's going to be getting the ball out quick. And I think you just got to get on this team early, because Tennessee this year has been bad in the second half. So if you put them in a hole early, I think this game could go our way in a big way, and we kind of need that right now. It feels good to beat Kansas City, but there's still a little bit of that game where you're like, did Kansas City beat themselves or did we beat them? I think we need to go out and we need to beat Tennessee and make it a no question type move on offense. Defensively, I think you need to continue the dominance in the run game that we've seen, that I was a little surprised about on the defensive end. Grover Stewart is a – let's make sure this my mic is here – a menace. Grover Stewart is ridiculous. And yeah, you got to keep up that run game. You got to keep Derrick Henry controlled. Keep him in that realm of looking a little – of a shell of himself that he's looked recently. And you need to force Ryan Tannehill in this passing game to beat you. I made the joke earlier that Treylon Burks could have his coming out game in the NFL because it's the Colts. I think you got to make it to where that's what you force Tennessee to do. You force Tennessee to beat you in the ways that they're not comfortable. You force Ryan Tannehill to throw up the sidelines. You take the middle of the field out. You make Ryan Tannehill do things he's not comfortable with. And I think if you do both those things, we get into the second half and Tennessee's making the decision on whether or not Malik Willis should come in.
Yeah, man, that's what you got to do. You got to strip them of their confidence early. I won't be as long, because you hit on a lot of the key points that I wanted to hit on as well. I'll just say this. Offensively, you have to run the ball early. You have to run the ball early and often. I think the whole passing game would be predicated off that. Tennessee is terrible against the run. They're playing terrible football against the run, you know. So what you want to do is you want to make those guys feel the need to have to put eight in the box. I don't like the secondary enough. I think you can win a multitude of ways in this game. I think the offense can be effective through the air or on the ground on this Tennessee defense, because they're just not healthy. You know, taking away their best pass rusher, Harold Landry, really was a critical blow for this team. And this team just hasn't looked like the defense that we thought they were going to look like before the season. You know, the secondary is really young. Make those guys make plays against people like Michael Pittman and Alec Pierce. You're going to get one-on-one situations because they're going to sell out to stop the run, just like every team has pretty much been playing the Colts. So Matt Ryan is going to get the looks and the matchups that he wants, the scheme. They're going to scheme up different mesh opportunities. Tennessee's going to get caught in one-on-one situations, and you have to execute it. That's pretty much football 101. We know that. Teams sell out to stop the run, so you get the looks that you want in the passing game, and you have to execute. So that's all I have to say offensively. Defensively, the Titans lost Taylor Lewan for the season. Sorry to see that. They signed LaRaven Clark. Let them marinate.
No chance he plays Sunday. No chance.
If he's active, that's a win for the Colts. Anytime LaRaven Clark's active, something bad is going to happen for the organization that he's active for.
If Tennessee puts out the tweet that LaRaven Clark has been activated for game, I will find and choose a GIF that I will use, and I will retweet it. I'll quote tweet that tweet with that GIF. You guys can look out for it. And then if LaRaven Clark plays, every single time he loses a snap on Sunday, I will tweet that GIF. No context. Only people that understand what's going on are you guys, but I will do it.
And I'm going to quote tweet it every time he tweets it and say, IK, if you know, you know. IYK, if you know, you know. That's it. That's all I'm saying. That's all we're going to say about it. But you have to take advantage of this offensive line, man. You have to find a way to get pressure on Ryan Tannehill, not turning your back to him, which is good because the Colts don't play a lot of man-to-man situations. So you always pretty much have a set of eyes on him because, you know, he's mobile. He likes to move around a little bit. Force him, like Destin said, to throw the ball to the sideline. He's effective most in the middle of the field, hitting those crosses, hitting those digs. And that's what you have to do. You have to limit the middle of the field for him. And if you do that, I think you'll be fine. I don't see much of a threat in this passing game. You're going to pretty much load up the box and stop Derrick Henry on early downs. Hilliard is the back that they're going to bring in on third downs, try to throw him the ball, get him screen passes or a little angle routes, out routes. They're going to try to find ways to get him the ball. He's our version of Nyheim Hines, and he can be effective sometimes in a short area. But I don't see many threats on this Titans offense. If the Colts play the way they're supposed to play, then I think they should be fine. But as we know, through this season, the first 3 weeks, they have played exactly how we haven't expected them to play in each of the first three games. So you can't really call it for sure, but you would like to believe the Colts is going to win this one. And segueing right to Destin, giving us our winner and our score prediction before we head on out of here. Who you got?
I'm going to go the Colts are going to win this one. I just went ahead and looked at the Titans' projected starting offensive line for Sunday. Dennis Daly, Aaron Brewer, Ben Jones is good.
Yeah, Ben Jones.
Nate Davis is good. And rookie Nicholas Petit-Frere. That is an interesting offensive line, if I have ever seen one. I'm going to say the Colts offense gets going this week, and I'm going to say the Colts win 30. The Colts are going to score 30 on Tennessee. It's going to be
for the first time this season.
30. I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it, Rashad.
For the first time this season. For the first 30, time. 30.
And I'm going to say to 17.
That's okay. I like that.
That's a 13-point win right there.
Which is funny. You're staying on a 13-point win. I actually have the Colts winning 27-14. I think the Colts cruise in this one. I know it's going to get a lot of hype because Tennessee and Colts have battled, you know, have these grueling division battles. This game is going to get a lot of hype, a lot of coverage. But I think the Colts will control this one throughout and for the first time this season put together a wire-to-wire good performance. And it's imperative that they do it, man, because the Colts got a short week coming up. They have to really put this – it would be nice to put this one away early and rest up because you're going to Mile High Thursday and you're going to face the Broncos. So we're going to talk about that all next week. Hopefully we get a victory from the Colts. Destin, do you have anything else? Do you want to tell them about your piece that came out today?
Yeah, guys, make sure you guys are checking out my weekly piece that comes out every single Wednesday, which is the day we're recording this. So it came out today. But when you guys are listening, this came out yesterday, where I will be ranking the Colts team needs every single week, post game. This is the second week, so make sure you guys check it out. Already, I have a new number one team need for the Colts. This position may have jumped up four spots for me after this third week of just checking things out. So make sure you guys look into that, because I put a little detailed reasoning for why that group made it up there to number one.
Make sure y'all check that out on Stampede Blue. And while you're on Stampede Blue, check out my piece for the week, Behind Enemy Lines. This week, the person I'm writing about is Derrick Henry. And I'm going to talk all about how the Titans use him and what's the Colts' best way to stop him. And that should be out for Friday or Saturday, I suppose, definitely before the game. Make sure you check both of those pieces out by us. And this has been another episode of the Saddle Up Show, man. Thank y'all for listening. We see y'all next week.